It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jean Purcell, in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll look at new numbers on Great Lake water levels in our state news roundup.
First, we're taking a look back at some of the best books from 2014, and we'd like to hear from you. What was your favorite book or books from the last year? What book kept you enraptured? Call in and share your favorite titles at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Gabe Habash joins us now. He's the Deputy Reviews Editor and Fiction Reviews Editor for Publishers Weekly. Gabe, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with a timely book. It's called Citizen, an American Lyric by Claudia Rankine. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, that's it's a really interesting book, and I think that in, you know, 10, 20 years, when people look back at 2014, it's going to be the book that everybody remembers. It's technically poetry, but it mixes poetry, essays, images from the media, contemporary art, and it's basically about modern race and racism in the 21st century. And obviously, with all the things that have been happening recently in the news with Ferguson and Eric Garner trial and case, it's just a topic that a lot of people are talking about, and it's just an incredible book, and it's the one that I think everybody's going to be talking about long down the line.
What is it about the way that Claudia writes about race that has managed to impact so many people who've read this book?
I mean, it's obviously a really weighted topic, you know, and we're seeing millions and millions of people tune into the news and hear what the latest developments are. And she just comes from a place that really takes on the complexity of the issue very well and handily. She, you know, goes from sympathy to outrage and just covers the entire spectrum of emotion and the whole history of the issue. And there's just not really a book like it this year.
And for people who don't think that they are readers of poetry, that don't want to read poetry, is there something about the way that this book fuses poetry and essay format to create something that's more readable for people who may not be interested in reading poetry?
Yeah, it's not. Don't take the poetry label to be anything to turn you off from it. It's not quote unquote difficult to follow. It's published by an extremely well-regarded press named Gray Wolf Press, which is a tiny independent press up in Minneapolis, and they just have garnered this really great reputation the last, you know, 10, 20 years, especially for publishing cutting-edge books that are ahead of their time. And this is like leading the campaign this year. It was a National Book Award finalist. A lot of people thought that it should have won, and it's totally accessible.
We're going to move on to another book now. This is from the same publisher, Gray Wolf, and this one is called On Immunity, An Inoculation by Eula Biss. What made this book about childhood immunization rise to the top for you?
Well, it's actually very similar to Citizen. The Gray Wolf Press has just really knocked it out of the park this year. They actually have a number of books that sort of blend a lot of different forms and use a lot of different sources to make their case. This one is on the immunization topic, and it's by Eula Biss, who is a National Book Award winner. And she, like Claudia Rankine, brings a lot of different sources to the table. She uses mythology, she uses scientific research, and she even draws from personal background as a young mother. Or a mother of a young son.
Right. This is a personal story for her, right? Because she, her child, it sounds like, was born when there was that whole panic about the H1N1 virus. And she was really confused about whether or not to seek a vaccination for her infant. And it sounds like that's what sort of launched her on this whole quest.
Correct. It's sort of, you know, it's almost like a detective story in that way. She had her child and she sought to figure out an issue that she didn't know that much about. And being a writer, being naturally curious, she sort of dissects it from every different angle.
And this is a contentious issue to this day, vaccinations. I know she has some opinions about Dr. Sears, who is more or less anti-vaccine, although he suggests an alternate schedule. Does she come away with any conclusions about this?
She she suggests an alternate shot schedule, and she defends the criticized pediatrician Paul Offit for his research, and you know, she just comes away with an optimistic look on the issue, and really the it's the personal side of the story that really gets you involved with the book. It's not just like a straight science book, you know, it's sort of a blend, just like Citizen is.
So these might be for people on our shopping list who want to think about big issues, grapple with important things, but also, you know, you have a really first-rate literary reading experience.
Correct. That's correct.
And another one of these that may fall into that category, and again, from Grey Wolf, you're liking Grey Wolf this year.
Yep.
This one's called The Empathy Exams. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, and again, continuing the trend, and sort of, these three books sort of led the campaign for sort of mixed, using a bunch of different sources to make sort of a mosaic impression that you would take away from the book. But this book is called The Empathy Exams by Leslie Jamison. It's a total knockout. This is an essay collection. So she talks about they're all this the essays are all sort of united under the topic of empathy. But she talks about reality TV. She talks about Girls, the HBO show. She talks about stereotypes. She talks about being an actor for doctors to test their patients and sort of like faking illnesses. And it's just a total surprising, varied book. She just covers the entire gamut, and it's an amazing book.
Now, this is under the umbrella of empathy, which is a pretty heavy, thoughtful topic. Are these also fun to read since she's covering so many pop culture topics?
Yeah, she does cover, you know, like I said, she covers pop culture, and it's just one essay after another that it's just totally surprising. She talks about ultra marathoners, which, you know, you sort of don't really know the world until you read this essay about it. And then one of the more really surprising and moving essays in the book is about Morgellons disease, which is sort of thinking that you have something in your skin and it's sort of delusionally based, or maybe not. It's a really controversial topic. And she goes to a convention, actually, with people who are suffering from the disorder, and it's sort of about like whether it's sort of about believing other people have the disease if they believe it. And it's just really, really fascinating.
And Gabe, just briefly, this is a collection of essays that we're talking about here, and often essay collections, unless they're written by a person who's pretty famous, they might not make a big splash. Are essays though having a moment right now?
They are. Yeah, definitely. And this book really came out of nowhere. It was, I mean, Leslie Jamison's published one prior novel with a big house. I think it was Random House. It was called The Gin Closet. And this won a nonfiction prize to be published by Grey Wolf. And it's showing up on all of the best of 2014 books list. And it's sort of rekindled the discussion about essays that hasn't been around for a while.
We're talking with Gabe Habash of Publishers Weekly now about the best books of 2014.
And we're also taking your calls, too. What was your favorite book in 2014? What was the book you read that you just couldn't put down and other people need to know about it? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post your favorites on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our conversation now about the best books of the year with Gabe Habash of Publishers Weekly.
And we're taking your calls to tell us about your favorite book of the past year. What do you think was the best book of the year? Or do you have a variety of books that you would like to recommend? And what was it that made it so great? Was 2014 a good year for books in your estimation? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And don't forget, you can also post your suggestions on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we're picking up now, turning to fiction. And this is a book that I guess technically didn't come out in 2014, almost did, late 2013. But Gabe, you love this one so much, you had to include it. Tell us about it's called Sea of Hooks by Lindsay Hill.
Yeah, it did come out last year, but it didn't get the recognition that I think it deserved we put it in our top 10, and I think New York Magazine put it in their top 10. But because it's from a small press, and it sort of has a difficult concept or premise, it didn't get the near recognition that it deserved. It's called Sea of Hooks. It's by Lindsay Hill, who is a poet, and this is his first novel. He is in his 60s. He took 20 years to write the book.
Wow.
And it's just phenomenal. It's written in titled fragments, so it's almost like these little scenes that happen. They're about a paragraph long, and it just sort of builds to this incredible, moving, unforgettable portrait of a person with a troubled background who sort of sees the light at the end of the book. And it's absolutely incredible.
It sounds like a really fantastical redemption story. Doesn't this person, they have some abuse in their background, an alcoholic father and a troubled mother. And they end up at the end of it, after all of this abuse, going to Bhutan and sort of finding some peace there.
Yeah. So the story is, it's about a boy named Christopher who grows up in the 50s and 60s in San Francisco. And he just sort of undergoes every sort of trauma imaginable. Like you said, he has problems with his parents. He suffers some abuse, and he sort of grows into the shell of an adult, not really knowing what to do with his life. And so he becomes a banker. And then he has sort of this psychic break, and he goes to Bhutan. And like you said, it's just an incredible redemption story. But even that's sort of like, you know, simplifying it a little bit, it's just the language in the book is just unlike anything I've ever read. And I mean, it changed my life. It's an incredible book.
Wow. It changed your life. This book changed your life.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't say that lightly. I read for my job. I read all the time, and books are, you know, my job. And it's that's why I'm bringing it up. It's, you know, a year old, but it, not enough people have read it. It belongs on everybody's bookshelf.
All right. Well, that's a strong recommendation right there. That one's called Sea of Hooks by Lindsay Hill. So hopefully more people will be drawn to that one after hearing you talk about it. Now, this is one, the next one is called The Martian by Andy Weir, which it sounds like a fantastic read. Maybe if you're looking for a gift read for someone who likes sort of science fiction. What is The Martian about?
Yeah. So this one I wanted to bring up just so you guys don't think I'm just trying to, you know, bring really serious, heavy matters. This is a genre book. It's sort of Robinson Crusoe in space is the premise, basically. It's an astronaut named Mark Watney, and he is on Mars, and a dust storm happens, and it's sort of like limited supplies, like will he or will he not survive? And it's just white knuckle, you know, just seeing him work through the problems, you know, throughout the book is just, you just keep turning the pages. And the movie rights have already been sold. It's going to come out next year with Matt Damon as the lead character. And it's both like a science fiction book and a thriller. So, you know, anybody who likes to keep turning the pages to find out what's going to happen is going to like this book.
It sounds a little bit like, what was the movie with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock last year?
Yeah. It's sort of like Gravity, and it's
Gravity.
A lot. Yeah, it's just the author Andy Weir just knows exactly what he's doing and knows exactly how to end a chapter to get you to start the next one, and you're going to lose some sleep reading it. So
wow, well, that's a high recommendation too. A lot of books written about space this year. Did this one manage to carve out some fresh territory?
Yeah, and I think it's exactly for the reason I said before. It just blends science fiction with mystery. It's not really a mystery, but with thriller. The sort of like, you know, sweaty palms feeling you get when you're reading a really great thriller. It's just really, really great.
Great. And you've left us with one last book. This is, I gather, the third book in, I think, what's going to be a trilogy by the author Elena Ferrante. And it's called Those Who Leave and Those Who Stay. Why should we read this one?
Yeah. So this one, I also think, has a really broad appeal. And if you're looking for a gift to get somebody this year, I really think that anybody who has, who appreciates a great book is going to love this book. It's technically the one that came out, this year is technically the third book in a series. So I would suggest actually buying the first one in the series, which came out 2 years ago. and that's called My Brilliant Friend. And but if the person you're getting it for, or if you're getting it for yourself, if you're like everybody else around the country who starts reading the series, you're just going to buy the second one and the third one. It's just a total addictive book. And it's just about two girlhood friends growing up in Naples. And it's this epic story about how their friendship evolves and changes throughout the years. And the third one that came out this year is sort of when picks up when they're adults. The first one, My Brilliant Friend, starts when they're children. But yeah, it's just an incredibly well-written book.
Elena Ferrante is Italian. Did she write this in Italian or English?
It's written in Italian. And she has sort of a cult status over there. She's sort of an Italian Thomas Pynchon. She's a recluse. Nobody knows what she looks like. There's been articles written about whether she's a man. Everybody's sort of speculating whether who she is, what she looks like. There's no pictures of her. And so she's just reached this sort of like cult status. And this is one of the big series that people are just starting to pick up on. And it has like universal acclaim.
Terrific. Well, so many good things for us to consider reading and maybe to give as gifts this year. Gabe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
We've been speaking with Gabe Habash, Deputy Reviews Editor and Fiction Reviews Editor for Publishers Weekly. He was with us to talk about the best books of 2014. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Jean Purcell in for Rob Ferret.
It's our state news roundup. Today, new numbers on water levels in the Great Lakes and a look at how we spend our money on local roads in Wisconsin.
Noah Ovshinsky joins us every week at this time to talk about state news. Noah, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be here and happy pledge, Gene.
Well, thank you so much. Let's start out with water levels in the Great Lakes. This is a topic, I'll tell you, it's been in the news for the past several years in terms of low levels. But now the federal government has released some new data this week indicating that water levels are actually going up.
Yeah, things are changing, at least temporarily. According to the federal government, Lakes Michigan and Huron, which are connected physically, are up almost three and a half feet since January of 2013. Lake Superior is up almost 2.5 feet in the same time.
Now, those figures sound pretty big to me, but I am a layperson. So put this into context. How much higher are these than, say, compared to 2 years ago?
Right. So if you put this in historical context, simply put, there has never been a faster recovery in water levels in a 2-year time span we're talking about. Mm-hmm. At least since the 1800s.
Wow, that seems impressive.
Yeah, so it's a big and quick recovery in water levels.
And I think that's especially telling since a couple of years ago we were hearing stories about needing to dredge out deeper channels for ships and, you know, shorelines. I remember seeing some photos of cottages and all of a sudden their shores were way out there.
It's amazing. And if you look at the last 15 years, you know, the lakes were below their historic averages. Mm-hmm. And for a while there, it was looking like that was going to remain the case for the foreseeable future.
So what's going on here? Where's that water coming from?
Well, there frankly has been a lot more rain and snow in the Great Lakes region, and perhaps just as importantly, less evaporation. Now, evaporation is key here, and I hate to throw
out. Last winter, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Last winter. The Great Lakes were frozen, basically completely frozen. And when the lakes are frozen, when there's a lot of ice cover, that means there's simply less evaporation in the lakes. And so that's where some of that recovery came from.
So the question I think a lot of people now have on their minds, because a couple years ago, as I mentioned, looking at really low lakes, all of a sudden we've got some high water. The question is, do scientists know whether these levels are going to remain there?
Yeah, well, scientists, you know, will probably say these predictions are reliable up to about 6 months from now. Mm-hmm. They don't like to look beyond that because, you know, look like something like last winter when we had that Arctic blast. I mean, 6 months prior to that, you know, hydrologists could not have predicted that was going to happen. So if you look at the next 6 months, they say water levels in Lake Superior will stay about 10 inches higher than last year. Lakes Michigan and Huron will be at least 15 inches higher as well. And that's looking towards the next six months.
So finally, you know, I got to ask, is it good news or is it bad news?
It depends. It's like so many things, Gene. It's it's both. Shippers are able to carry more cargo on the lakes when water levels are higher. Marinas, of course, require less dredging. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that at the top of the interview. Docks that were maybe unusable for some homeowners are now useful again because there's more water. On the other hand, a possible downside is there's a greater chance of erosion along the shoreline. In fact, the Army Corps of Engineers is already getting complaints from homeowners about increased erosion.
Wow. I mean, it does go to show you that things do make a difference like that. Well, moving on, some news in transportation funding. You know, we've been hearing a lot about this in the last few weeks, too. But this is a new report that I had not heard about regarding transportation funding in the counties.
Yeah. So this was a report released this week by the Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance in cooperation with several county organizations. And basically, it looked at spending on local roads. And they found that per capita spending grew a half percent since the year 2000 here in Wisconsin. And that compares to roughly 3.5% nationally. So basically their point being we're spending far less on local roads than we should be.
Why did the Taxpayers Alliance choose to do this report and then release it now?
Well, the timing is interesting because we are going into the next budget negotiation here. The Transportation Department has released its proposed budget and frankly, the transportation system here in Wisconsin, I'm going to call it a crisis. We have a funding crisis right now. People are driving less and cars are becoming more fuel efficient, which means we're collecting less revenue through gas taxes. And that means there's been less money to pay for road construction. And what the legislature and the governor has to deal with early next year is how are we going to pay for these roads? And right now, there are, you know, competing proposals.
Yeah, so let's talk about what the counties and the Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance want, and then maybe take a look at some of those competing proposals.
Right. So, you know, the local governments will argue that, you know, they want more investment in those roads because there are many more miles of local roads than there are state highways or interstates. And they've thrown out a few options. They don't really commit to either of them or all of them, but they do say that these are viable options. They would like a return to indexing the gas tax, which Wisconsin did until 2006, and that basically ties the price of gasoline, the tax rather, it's tied to inflation. They're also suggesting imposing the current 5.5% sales tax on gasoline purchases, potentially. And they also say that wheel taxes are another way of funding roads. And wheel taxes essentially are, they could be many things, but they are vehicle registration fees or other fees that is assessed by a city or another sort of local unit of government.
And so we've heard about some other funding suggestions, too. Most the ones that come to mind are from the Department of Transportation. Some suggestions in there for raising the gas tax. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce also proposing that. So lots of things to think about there, which means the governor has some decisions. So what's coming up next?
Hopefully compromise, but a lot of disagreement. You know, there are a lot of legislators, especially now with the more conservative caucus in the assembly, who are weary of new taxes. And yet, you know, to pay for roads, the money has to come from somewhere. So is it going to be more bonding? Is that money for roads going to come from other budgets like education? Maybe it will come from one or more of the suggestions that the local governments made this week. You know, to be continued for sure. But I think this issue of transportation, it's not going away. And it's one that I think, you know, certainly the Wisconsin state government, as well as counties, are having to grapple with.
All right. And finally, we turn to another very interesting story out of the city of Beloit this week. There was a proposal there. And you're going to have to tell me a little bit more about this because I've heard it and then I saw it. I misheard it. There was a proposal in Beloit about allowing authorities into a home to search for a gun.
Voluntarily.
Voluntarily. Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, right. So the Beloit Police Chief Norm Jacobs unveiled a plan last week to essentially curb gun violence in his community. And basically he wanted city residents to volunteer to have police search their homes. That was last week.
And so this week brings what news?
Yes. This week, the city of Beloit canceled the program really before it really had a chance to get off the ground.
So why did they do that?
City manager Larry Arf told WPR, you know, frankly, the plan wasn't vetted by the city's legal department. And the city manager indicated in that interview that there was a lot of concern in the community that the police were going to do some kind of sweep or, you know, come into people's homes without permission to confiscate their guns. I mean, there was a lot of concern in the community.
And, it, you know, it's one of those stories that I imagine sparks an awful lot of interest.
A lot. And in WPR's case, it was a record amount of interest. In a testament of how interested the public is in this topic, our initial story on this by Gilman Halstead, it was the most visited WPR story online this year.
Really?
In fact,
and the year is almost over.
And the year is almost over. Nearly 500,000 page views and something like 1,500 comments.
Wow, that's saying something, isn't
it? Yeah. I mean, this was certainly a hot topic for our audience.
Wow, very good. Well, Noah Obshinsky, thanks so much for joining us.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
Noah Obshinsky is the assistant news director here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He joins us this week at every time to talk about state news.